offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to yet another episode of Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind, and we are here to begin our first episode, so to say, of the Sanatan Sarthi series. We did have a curtain raiser last week. We spoke about various things that led to the beginning of the Sanatan Sarthi, how Swami said that it was one of the important phases of his avataric life, which was marked by the beginning of this, or the launch of the monthly article. We spoke about how Swami wrote in it regularly, how it has a very important place in the life of devotees, and we spoke about all of that. But today is the week that we are going to actually begin with the first issue of Sanatan Sarthi. So we're going to travel way back in time, February 1958. But even before we come to that, there were some small tidbits about how the magazine was produced and what a labor of love it called for from a few people who were involved in the production of an article, being as members of a production team. So to say, we also have our own articles that we publish online. We have programs that we produce. Those of you who joined us yesterday on the live program that we had, you know, for a 1 hour live program, we know how many man hours goes into it, how many audio engineers had to be alert and set things, how many videographers had to be on queue. They were all involved. You might have probably at the end of it seen only three of us speaking, myself, Arvind and Bishu were there. But so much of effort goes into it, and sometimes that effort goes unacknowledged. But of course, we will not let that happen when it comes to Sanatan Sarthi. We certainly have to speak about the enormous amount of effort, which was literally like the offering that was made in the Yajna done by Professor Kasturi, who was, in fact, in those days, the one-man army behind the Sanatan Sarthi, so to say. So we'll begin with that, but before we do all of that, let's again express our gratitude to Swami for giving us this opportunity to revisit some of these beautiful articles. As we had mentioned last time, we will not be dwelling into the real heart of Sanatan Sarthi, which is the article written by Swami, because that calls for a separate kind of an attention, and that's what is being done in the other programs. The last segment of the Thursday Live is a Vahini Satsang, where the Vahinis are taken and given its due prominence. Prema Vahini, which is the Vahini that Swami starts off with, has already been covered in the Vahini Satsang. Sandeha Nivarini is going on, so we will not be touching the Vahinis. But other than that, I think still there are enough gems to be excavated from these issues. So with that introduction, let me invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners from across the globe. Today is another special day, just like yesterday was Ishwarama Day. Today is the Buddha Purnima Day. So greetings on this wonderful day to all our brothers and sisters, especially the Buddhist brothers and sisters from across the globe. It is indeed yesterday we were discussing how Mother Ishwarama's life is an inspiring life for a devotee. In the similar lines, Bhagwan Buddha's journey from Siddhartha to Gautama Buddha is a very, very inspirational one, and it is something from which all of us devotees can learn from, because Buddha, as Siddhartha, was in the lap of luxury. He had almost no needs or wants in life because everything was fulfilled, and yet there was that deep-seated dissatisfaction that made him embark on a quest to find the truth. And he indeed found enlightenment. He found the truth, and that is what made him the Buddha. His life only shows what he has often professed and said, that is, sarvam dukkham sarvam kshanikam. Everything that we see in the material world is dukkham, meaning sorrow. It may appear to be sukham, it may appear to bring pleasure and happiness, but that's only for a little while, because ultimately it's going to lead to sorrow. And sarvam kshanikam, meaning everything is so momentary. Of course, it's the same eternal truth, whether in the words of the Buddha or in the words of Adi Shankaracharya, who says, Ma kuru dhana jana yavana garvam harati nimeshat kalas sarvam. You know, in one moment, everything is gone. Life itself is gone. We see that happening naturally or through tragedies, through accidents. Just in one moment, whatever we consider as, you know, the basis for our life seem to be just disappearing in just a moment. Life itself disappears in a moment like that. So today is a happy day in that sense that it is the birth of Siddhartha, who became Gautama Buddha.
They say it's a thrice blessed day. Hmm. It was the day on which Buddha was born. It was the day on which Buddha attained liberation or enlightenment. And it's also the day on which he finally discarded his mortal coils.
Oh, amazing.
It's to be a thrice blessed day.
Purnam, no wonder it is Purnam. And we can only hope that this day also inspires each one of us to bring the Buddha from within, bring out the Buddha from within. All of us have that. All of us are blessed with reasoning. All of us are blessed with that. I say blessed with that discontentment, because our soul seeks out permanent happiness always. And anything that doesn't give happiness, or anything that doesn't give permanent happiness, is not satisfying after a point in time. So all of us have that deep-seated dissatisfaction within us. May we be as adventurous, brave, courageous and truthful as Siddhartha and embark on this journey, becoming our own Buddhas. And I am sure that when we do this, we are quadruply blessed, maybe, because we have our Sanatana Sarathi to guide us. We have the words of Swami. We have the loving message of Swami. In fact, before we go to Professor Kasturi, I just thought we will begin with this message that was there in the first ever issue, because we will be covering that also in part today. The first ever issue, the February 1958 issue. The first ever message in that, Swami writes, "From this day, our Sanatana Sarathi will lead to victory the cohorts of truth." Who are the cohorts of truth? Swami says, the cohorts of truth, that is the Vedas, the Shastras, and similar scriptures of all faiths, against the forces of the ego, such as injustice, falsehood, immorality, and cruelty. This is the reason why it has emerged. This Sarathi will fight in order to establish world prosperity. It is bound to sound the pain of triumph when universal Ananda is achieved. So the vision and mission statement is placed right in the beginning of the Sanatana Sarathi, the first edition of the Sanatana Sarathi, first issue of the Sanatana Sarathi, where Swami says that Sanatana Sarathi will be the messenger who will guide the cohorts of truth, that is the Vedas, the Shastras, and all similar scriptures of all faiths. And what is the goal? The goal is universal Ananda, enlightenment, Nirvana, whatever we say, till we attain the Bodhisattva, as the Buddhists say. So, that sense, we are really lucky, dear listeners, that we have Swami's words guiding us even to this day. We have got them recorded in audio form, in text form. We must really be grateful to Swami. And definitely, as Prem said, grateful to his instrument, Professor Kasturi, who has done a painstaking job in ensuring that all of these are preserved carefully for posterity to enjoy and benefit from.
And even as you were telling about this message of Swami, in fact, much later when Swami writes the Gita Vahini, Swami writes about the Gita as being the, you know, when Krishna the Gopala milks the cow of the Upanishads and gives the essence of that, and that's what is Gita. And that is what the Sanatana Sarathi does, and Swami so beautifully says what Swami writes here is the Veda, and the role an avatar comes to play is that to give the same eternal message, give that same essence of Sanatana Dharma in a manner that it is applicable and comprehensible for the modern man. And so very beautifully worded, and even as we are saying worded, this definitely is a translation of what Swami has written in Telugu. Because we don't have the scholarship to go into the original Telugu, but so beautifully translated into English, keeping in mind the spirit in which it was said. And I think that's where Professor Kasturi comes into picture, because all of these beautiful Vahinis has been translated by him. But not merely translating, there is, as we were saying, so much goes into a production of a magazine. And we are talking of 1950s, and we are talking of Prashanthi Nilayam, which is I mean, we have enough number of descriptions to tell you what Prashanthi Nilayam was in the 1950s.
In fact, Prem, when you say translated into English, I'm just, you know, when we look at the background of Professor Kasturi, yes, even as he came to Swami, he was a literary genius. But the thing is, he is born in Kerala and his mother tongue happens to be Malayalam. And he stayed in Karnataka and he picked up the Kannada language so well, he became a jewel in the language Kannada. And though Kannada, Telugu are similar and Malayalam, Tamil are similar, they are vastly different when it comes to poetry and the nuances. And that is why, you know, it is a great tribute to Professor Kasturi that he has translated the Swami's Telugu into English. So it must have required so much of effort to go through. I'm not recollecting it off the hook now. Possibly if we are not able to, we can do it next week. But there is an episode where, you know, he totally misunderstood a translation.
Actually, Swami writes Rishikotulu, right? Where he, which means that the many rishis and sadhakas.
The crores of
rishis. And he translates it as Bush Kotlu. Because in Kannada, I mean, you'll be able to...
Yeah, the letter Ru in Telugu resembles the letter Bu in Kannada. Right. And so, yeah, Rishi Kotlu becomes Bush Kotlu. And he's wondering why is Swami referring to a bush coat. Correct. Right. And I think he goes to Swami and Swami reprimands him, chastises him for that. So
just the beauty of, you know, one thing is translating. I mean, just to give an idea of what it is. Swami writes an article. It is handwritten in Telugu, which means first it has to be transcribed or typed into Telugu. Of course, the printing, that's a totally different thing. We'll come to that. It has to be translated into English. That again has to be put in print, in type. And, you know, Padma Kasturi Aunty, who's the daughter of Professor Kasturi, she would say that it's like a everlasting image of her father. There used to be two, what we refer to as modas, you know, it's a cane like a stool.
Backless stool.
Right, backless stool. Most of our homes would have one. So there would be two such things. On one would be a typewriter, and on one, Professor Kasturi would be sitting. And endlessly, for hours together, he would be, with two fingers, he would be typing out, which means he had to type out the Telugu and the English. And for much of, you know, his tenure as the editor of Sanatan Sarthi, he probably did not have any assistants. Once in a while, devotees would come and volunteer. But invariably, you know, his entire day would be taken up in this act of simply sitting and translating and typing out in Telugu and English the various articles.
You know, I type quite a lot nowadays. When I just look back, imagine doing typing without the backspace, without the copy paste, without the edits. You know, those days,
without
the backspace.
Without
an online dictionary.
Spell check.
Yes, now we just, you know, we type it out. We have on-the-fly spell check. And yet, you know, Prem, every time we type something, we send it to each other. And we are able to find at least 10, 15 errors in it. Those days, I think for each of it, you had to just pull out the page, put white ink, rub. I mean, it's impossible for us who have been pampered with the electronic typing devices to even imagine how you could manage a monthly magazine without even the rudiments of a computer. So, but that was it. That was his labor of love. And as Professor Kasturi beautifully details in his Loving God book, through this process of preparing the Sanatan Sarthi itself, he was being prepared. You know, so many of his rough edges were smoothened. So many of his so many of the impediments in his spiritual growth were cleared, and he's forever grateful to Swami for that. Now, that is the humility of that
in
man.
In one word, you would call himself the chiseled child, right?
Exactly.
His typical style.
There's a chapter itself in Loving God called the Chiseled Child. And when he was pulled in as the editor, Swami gave personal attention. In fact, Professor Kasturi documents that Swami personally visits the Vichara Darpan Press to buy a foot-operated treadle printing machine along with a case of the Telugu and English types. So, for the modern generation who are not aware, basically once Swami gives a handwritten script, you read it and you type it down. You type it down in a typewriter so that you have the printed copy ready. Now, that you have to take and each page, you have blocks of each letters. You have to arrange those letters in the printing press because in one stamp, it's almost like how you have a rubber stamp.
Right. You the need whole rubber stamp for the entire page.
The whole right. page, a rubber stamp has to be prepared. And for that, each alphabet has to be arranged. And so it has to be done in an economic manner. It has to be done in a very intelligent manner because I don't think you'll have an infinite number of letter blocks. Right. There'll be a restricted number. So based on that, you possibly will change the script on the page or you possibly will do half page at a time. Oh God, the difficulties are just endless. It's almost like if I give you a children's block, you know, children's playing block and tell, here's a page in English. Arrange those blocks in that. I mean, how many blocks you will need, how many vowels you will need, how many consonants you will need. It's a very, very challenging thing to even get one page ready. Get one page ready and then you have to print it. Oh my God.
Right. And to think of, if you look at it, I'm not too sure Professor Kasturi would have done this before. Right. This is probably not, being a professor, being a
not his cup of tea.
History, probably this is not a job that he would have been trained to do or he learnt. He might have come and learnt it post his retirement. Right? He was already well past his retirement age to learn this whole thing and then do it on a monthly basis. So that was the first thing which was done. Swami himself visited the that Vichar Darpan press and bought this machine, and I think it was a leg press, right? You have to
once everything is ready, you press with the leg, it goes and prints,
right? And that many copies of that particular page that you need. So if there are 300 subscribers for the monthly journal, I think that yes. many times you will have to
press the pedal
with your leg, and that many pages have to be done, and again rearranging all those pages into separate journals.
Imagine, yeah, correct. I need 300 of page number one.
Right.
And just imagine once you do 30 of them, you notice an error. Oh God, correcting typos. That is why it is so difficult. And just printing them would not solve. Now that has to become a book. These are just loose pages. When we look at the Sanatan Sarthi magazines today, today meaning of the 1958, each magazine had about like 20 pages. So 20 into 300. At the end of it, you're left with 6,000 pages which have to be dried first because it's ink. And once that ink is dried, all those 6,000 pages now have to become 300 books. And that would entail a very, very long journey.
Right, absolutely. And more importantly, I think if you look at the Sanatan Sarathi, the old versions now, they're not the A4 size that we have. It's actually a smaller size.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm not wrong, I think two pages would be printed on one sheet. So that page had to be cut, right? And we are talking about cutting 300 pages or upwards of that. So those cannot be cut manually because then they have to be bound into a book. So there was a certain way in which it had to be cut. And there was no paper cutting machine anywhere in the vicinity of Puttaparthi. The nearest place where they could find that paper cutting machine was in Bangalore.
Hmm.
So now after having printed all of this, this had to be cut. Merely for cutting this and making that book, it had to be taken to Bangalore. And for doing that, what was the entire procedure? It entailed a long journey for these, papers. So it starts with first taking them to Bukapatnam in a bullock cart.
In a trunk,
you know, the olden days metal trunks that we have all seen.
Two or three trunks,
because Telugu and English separately, they had to be put. And they were taken to Bukapatnam. From Bukapatnam, they were loaded onto a bus to Penukonda. And they would be put on the top. And Penukonda also, it doesn't reach the bus stand. Somewhere midway, there is a junction where which is closer to the Penukonda railway station. So the bus had to stand midway, and there was one particular appointed porter. I think
Narsimachari was his help at.
I think another person, a very hefty porter, whose only duty was to come when this bus stops midway, bring down those trunks, then carry them to the railway platform, because it must have been quite a furlong to do that. Professor Kasturi, being old, could not have done it himself. So he would carry it on his head, take it to this platform, then catch the passenger at Penukunda railway station.
And by the way, it had to be booked as cargo in the train.
Booked as cargo, so you have to again load it into the cargo, and Professor Kasturi would take the same train and reach Bangalore. And in Bangalore, again, these trunks had to be put into a horse cart. And from there, they had to be taken to this press where they had this cutting machine.
And binding.
And papers would be cut. And then it would be taken to a devotee's house, where luckily, finally, he had a few volunteers who would help him arrange these pages into separate journals. And I think he would also bring the addresses.
Yeah. So what Professor Kasturi writes is, in the press that they go, the pages will be cut and bound into the book. And then folding these books and putting them in that wrapper with the addresses. So there he would have some volunteers who would do it late into the night. He would be awake to ensure everything is done fine, maybe 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. Sleep early in the morning, get up again by 6:37 so that the whole process can be repeated. They go back into the trunk, trunk into the horse cart to Bangalore railway station, their porter book it as cargo, freight. Back to Penukonda railway station, get down, the same porter who is there comes, carries it from there to the railway crossing, from the railway station to the railway crossing, where the bus from Penukonda to Bukapattam is stopped midway and it's loaded onto the top.
Bus, right.
Then Bukapattam, bullock cart back to Parthi.
And the beauty is, the reason why it was being done is, you know, even when I was reading this, you know, you've already bound the book.
You post it from Bangalore.
Why bring it all the way? Professor Kasturi writes, merely for the joy of, you know, when the subscribers receive their monthly journal, just that stamp coming from Prashanthi Nilayam made that journal more a prasadam than, I mean, it already is prasadam, but just for that joy, that people getting it from Prashanthi Nilayam. You know, many times even now, people tell us, can you send us some vibhuti? We tell them the same vibhuti is available in all the centers in, you know, around the world, because people come and take it from here. He said, no, send it from here, or send a picture from here. Can you buy a picture and send it to us? That sentimental value, to kind of honor that, this entire journey backwards were taken. And apart from even printing and, you know, typing out whatever Swami has written, there was nobody else to even type out the address. So even the address. So if there was a jump in subscription, it meant that more prints had to be made and more addresses had to be typed out by Professor Kasturi. And I think luckily this journey that we described was lasted for about a year. I think after that a paper cutting machine was procured.
You know, today we see the subscribers for our channel, and in a day this much went up, we feel so happy. I think Professor Kasturi would have highly appreciated quality over quantity those days, because even 20 people increase in subscription would mean that much. 400 more pages of printing, that much more luggage to carry.
Right. And add to that, for the first few months of this, what we described, he was the postmaster of Prashanthi Nilayam.
Exactly. Right. And he had to stamp it.
Right, he would have been the one stamping it, and there must have been other registers to fill and all of that. So he was also doing that.
So,
and
much.
Indeed, a tremendous labor of love, and many, many beautiful episodes. Yesterday we were speaking about Mother Ishwarama. You could imagine, you know, when the journal started, apparently she would come and ask, said, what is this? What does he write every month? You know, does he write properly? You don't know.
Hope it makes sense.
Are people reading it, what he's writing, you know? And then Professor Kasturi said, Amma, what are you asking? People are eagerly waiting for it. And he's saying that every festival, more and more people are coming and asking for this magazine to be sent home.
In fact, that was the idea with which Swami started. In a chapter, I forget the name of the chapter, in Loving God, Professor Kasturi describes how Swami says that once the subscription expires, don't send reminders for subscription to any of the subscribers. They should miss the sarathi. In fact, it's so poetic, his description, like people running to the postman and asking, where is my sarathi? Where is my sarathi? Where is the charioteer of the vehicle of my life? Has he come? He has not come. And Swami says they should miss and they should come. In fact, today when we go about not actively seeking subscriptions or anything, I just feel in a sense it is right, because one might wonder what is wrong. Yes, quality is important, but quantity, what's wrong in quantity? I think without having explicitly stated it, Swami made it very clear that all the spiritual teachings or message that is there, it becomes valuable only when we actively seek it and value it. If it is given, if it's given on a platter to us and we are not actually craving or yearning for it, it won't have any benefit. That is the reason why I think Swami says that to Professor Kasturi that don't remind them that a subscription is expiring. If the subscription expires and they don't miss it, no problem. Let them not get it. They should yearn. They should remember, oh God, in 2 months it's going to expire. Let me go and renew it. They should crave and yearn, because in spirituality, only when we crave and yearn and we really want, then only the benefit comes. I think it's based on this only that even Shirdi Baba distinguishes between prashna and pariprashna. A question that is asked with yearning is beneficial for the answer will be the same from the master. But the benefit or the understanding that the disciple derives when the question is asked with yearning versus when the question is simply asked is tremendously different. And that's why that yearning, wanting, needing is so very important.
And of course, this was not Swami creating some kind of a, you know, artificial craving. Swami was actually mentioning what devotees feel about it. You know, Sanatan Sarathi Swami was writing himself, you know, I can say this even about our Thought for the Day Science by subscription. Sometimes, you know, we might not be able to relate to that. Some people write to us saying that, you know, today I didn't get the mail. I thought probably I did something wrong in my day and Swami was pointing out to me. And I started introspecting, what did I say or do that displeased Swami. You know, that is the kind of sentiment that people have. It is not that Swami was saying that you should have that, you know, creating that craving. Swami was actually saying that there are people with that craving, and that is the kind of craving that this magazine or whatever words that Swami writes or sends is going to satisfy. And, you know, in many ways, even today you can make out that when people have that kind of an craving and they look out for Swami's message, Swami ensures that, you know, any number of mails we get, that, you know, there was this particular message that you sent and it was perfectly apt for me and I was asking a question and it answered me. And there is no way that sitting here we could manufacture that kind of experiences. It really means that there is a craving in devotees, and Swami has his own ways of reaching out to people, be it in 1958 or in 2020. I think Swami is always available for that devotee who craves for him.
And again, this is a slightly divergent thought, but I just thought I'll state it because this is my personal experience at least, that whenever we are in trouble, we somehow seek Swami more. Corona comes and shuts us into our homes, and now suddenly we see a surge in the number of, consumption of audiovisual material on Bhagwan. Yes, one might say that all other entertainments are also being consumed. Correct. I still feel that in happy times, we don't think of Swami as much as we think of Swami in tough times and difficult times. And theoretically, when we know that the greatest achievement in our life is Swami, the greatest thing we can achieve in our life is Swami, when we know that theoretically, then I think that's why we should be happy to welcome difficult situations, because it's only the difficult situations that make us focus back on the things in life that truly matter. So that is the thing, because, you know, whether it is Sanatana Sarathi, Satya Sai Speaks, Swami's discourses, freely available, and yet I don't think on a daily basis we listen to one discourse of Swami. When I say we, I'm just meaning myself especially and generally. There might be an exceptional few who do it on a daily basis as a sadhana, but how many of us value the things that we get for free? Things that we get for free, like air, like water. You know, just today we had a news of a sad tragedy near an Indian town where there was a chemical leak and so many people have died. That, you know, made me realize the value of, you know, when we have normal air which we can breathe, it's such a valuable gift. We don't realize it. It strikes us only when a tragedy like this happens. Unfortunately, that is the thing. When it happens, we are awakened to the fact. So also, I think, is Swami's discourses and Swami's message. Freely we are getting it. You know, we possibly may not go to the mandir on a daily basis because it is there. Now Swami is physically not there. What I'll do near the samadhi? We come to Parthi, spend 3 days. Okay, I already had darshan. What else can I do? We ask. Just put a gate there, put a queue and put a ticket for 1,000 rupees or $500. Then suddenly there'll be a craving, you know. when it's given free, we sometimes lose the value for it. And it is my sincere prayer and my hope to Swami that Swami, we should not take these pearls and diamonds that you have given us for granted. May we value it, cherish it, treasure it, and thereby benefit from it.
Right. And I think we'll go into the issue. The first issue, as we said, it was launched on Shivratri of 1958. But maybe before we go into the issue itself, we'll take a short little break. Dear listeners, don't go away, because after this, we will be beginning with the very first issue of Sanatan Sarathi and the various articles which were printed as part of that.
Share the narration, Amrita.
दान दो साईं मुझे वरदान
Welcome back, dear listeners, and as we said, we will begin with the first issue of Sanatan Sarthi, 1958. It was the special issue on the occasion of Mahashivratri, and even as we read out that passage, which was the first message that Swami gave, and Swami said, the Sanatan Sarthi will fight in order to establish world prosperity. It is bound to sound the pain of triumph when universal ananda is achieved. Swami started his first vahini, and of course, as I was saying, we've done an entire series on this vahini, which also happens to be one of the vahinis that we tried one of our video productions on, because it was Swami's first vahini. The interesting thing about this vahini is Swami names it Prema Vahini. I'm not sure whether in the beginning when it was launched as Prema Vahini. I'm not too sure of that.
Yes, in the first issue itself, right, it is called Prema Vahini.
It was called Prema Vahini. So it was started off that way. And the interesting thing about this Vahini, even when we tried that video production and when we were doing the satsangs, the first few chapters, Swami doesn't use the word Prema at all. You know, when you think that Swami is writing on Prema Vahini, you tend to imagine that Swami must be speaking about bhakti, right? He'll say that, oh, the glorious bhakti marga, and speaking about the great saints and sages who were, you know, people who reached the goal through this marga. But nothing like that. In fact,
in other words, if it was published online today, it would not be, search word friendly at all.
Right? Yeah, I mean, there are no keywords and your title is not matching. But very interestingly, and I believe not till the later half of the Vahini itself, when you look at it as a book, Swami even mentions the word Prema in it. But if you really look at it, look at the idea behind that being named Prema, Swami would say that whatever he says, and this is not only Swami saying, we have also seen it, whatever Swami does, whether Swami gives an interview to a family that is having a problem, whether Swami ignores a family which comes with a problem, the first time Swami stood up to speak, which was in Karur, we have spoken about that, 1948, the first time Swami spoke, or the many leelas that Swami would do, the many miracles, Swami would often say that, see, these are all, you might give it different labels, but the only reason why I do whatever I do is because of my love. It is only an expression of my love. It is only an outpouring of my love. So the very first time when Swami took a pen to write, which would eventually become a book, Swami named it Prema Vahini because it was nothing but the same flow of his love, but in a different form. And I think that could be the only reason why Swami chose to name it Prema Vahini, because even if Swami doesn't speak about Prema at all, it is Prema, it is Swami's Prema which is flowing. And that was the very, very first article that Swami writes.
So as we said, we will leave that for another segment and another program. After that, actually, if you look at the first issue, all those who are physically near and dear to Swami, they are the ones who are chosen because it's the first one. So there is Swami has contributed. Again, Professor Kasturi. Now look, not just about being postmaster, typing, printing, translating and all that. He is also an original content creator. So Professor Kasturi has written an article. And then, of course, there's an article by Raja Reddy. He's another amazing stalwart. And I think on Radio Sai, we have covered a beautiful interview, which is there on YouTube as well as in text form. Beautiful Raja Reddy Garu. He was one of the first servitors of Bhagwan, physically staying with Bhagwan in his residence and serving him for almost 2 decades, I think. So there's an article by Raja Reddy Garu. And there are 2 other articles. apart from a description of Shivratri at Prashanthi Nilayam. More than Shivratri at Prashanthi Nilayam, there's a description of Shivratri across India, how it is celebrated, and a small paragraph on how it is a little different in Prashanthi Nilayam. So this is more or less the total content in the first ever issue of the Sanatana Sarathi. So Prem said what Swami has written. After Swami followed is the article by Professor Kasturi. And he writes the story of Amritananda, Swami Amritananda. Swami Amritananda has become very famous in Sai circles because of the vision of golden Ganesha that was granted to him. See, when he was a 7-year-old, he had done a kind of Ganapati Homam, which the scriptures say that having done that in the prescribed manner perfectly, you will be rewarded with the darshan of Ganesha in a golden form. So that he had done as a 7-year-old. And he came to Swami, to Prashanthi Nilayam, to Puttaparthi as a 85-year-old. So a good 78 years since that episode had happened. So he had beautiful, how he came to Swami, what happened, yes, we will cover that a little later, but this particular incident during one of the many interviews that he was granted by Swami. See, he came with the idea of staying in Puttaparthi for a couple of days, seeing what it is and leaving. But he ended up staying for 75 full days in Prashanthi Nilayam, in Puttaparthi. During those days, he got many interviews. And in one of those interviews, Swami reminded him and asked him whether he remembers what he had done as a 7-year-old. And Swami Amritananda could not forget it, because that was one of the most big efforts that he had done, and possibly that was one of the earliest recollections he had. He said, yes Swami, as a 7-year-old I did this. And Swami asked him, what is the reward for doing that? He said, Swami, I just felt happy doing it. The scriptures say that the reward is that you have to have the darshan of golden Ganesha, but I must confess that I did not have that, but I remember doing it and I felt very happy doing it. And it's a thing that was done for, I think, 40 or 41 days. 41 days continuously it is done. And Swami said, how can that go unrewarded? You will be rewarded. And then and there, Swami Amritananda had the darshan of the golden Ganesha. Swami gave him darshan as the golden Ganesha, and, you know, he vouchsafed to him what was due. And with that, he was completely bowled over. You know, that is the reason why he had come to stay for 3 days. And he ended up staying for 75 days. So, in this article, Professor Kasturi writes a little more about Swami Amritananda, which is very interesting, because this Golden Ganesha story, many people in the Sai circles know, and it has been documented, it's there online many places. But the rest of his story, which is equally interesting and absorbing, is not there, and we get that from this article by Professor Kasturi.
Right, and Professor Kasturi writes that it was about 2 years before the period when the article was being written. So I think 1955-56 must have been the time, because there's another event related to his visiting Swami. We'll come to that. So as Arvind was saying, he was actually going to Sringeri because he had a very fond connection with Sringeri, because Sri Narasimha Bharati of the Sringeri Math was the person who had actually given him sannyas. And he was given sannyas during the Kumbhabhishekam of the Shankaracharya and Sharada Devi temple in Kaladi, which is in 1910, which was like much, much before Swami was born. So it was like 40-45 years when he has been a sannyasi, and he's been to all those sacred places which sannyasi usually visit. He's been to Rishikesh many, many times. Then he was directed to spend a lot of time with Ramana Maharishi. And that's where, you know, I think during some of those travels in southern India is when he actually sees a picture of Swami and he comes. But illustrious career, and not only that, he has been associated with some of the great political, spiritual political leaders of that time, because he has worked with Mahatma Gandhi, Bal Gangadhar Tilak, Madan Mohan Malviya. In fact, he was in discussion with them to how they can revive the Indian culture and Bharatiya traditions. And I mean, he was a very, very well accomplished, very well read. I mean, you can imagine an 8-year-old person, first of all, he could quote verbatim from the Upanishads and the Vedas. And you can imagine, Professor Kasturi says, I think from what Professor Kasturi writes, I think he had the opportunity to be the host for Swami Avadhutananda, because he says that he stayed with me. So he says, he could regale tales of many, many episodes with all these great people. So a very, very learned person. In fact, when we were preparing for the program yesterday, we did not mention this, but Swami Amritananda was the person to whom Mother Kasturi, Mother Isharamma goes and asks, Swami is, quoting in our hostel parlance, left, right, he's quoting.
So many things he's saying.
So many things from, Sanskrit and Vedas, and he's saying, Mahavakyas and all that. Sarigane Cheptunada, is he telling the right things? Because in 1956-55, probably he must have been one of the, giants that visited Prashanthi Nilayam. And
for the sweet, innocent Mother Ishwaramma, I think he fitted a spiritual personality more than her own
son. And he's
son.
Quoting, he's also quoting like that. And in Mother's own words, she always had the fear that some scholar would come up and start challenging Swami. So, and he must have been one of the few scholars who came
yes,
by.
Yes, and
that
he
time.
Must, yeah, he was 85 at that time.
85, right? And that is the kind of a giant that he was. And Professor Kasturi writes that, as you were saying, 3 days was his plan. But when he comes, he's, of course, drawn by Swami. He says when he goes and sits in front of Chitravati, he's reminded of sitting on the ghats of Ganga in Rishikesh. And he stays on, and for Swami's part, Swami gives him an audience almost every day.
Yeah, in fact, what is so amazing is he is a genuine seeker, which is evident from the amount of effort he has put in. He has traveled, as you said, to Rishikesh many times. He has been at Tiruvannamalai. He has also traveled to Dwarka and Puri. They are almost considered like the spiritually the western and eastern ends of Bharat. So literally like Adi Shankaracharya, north, south, east, west he has traveled. And he is associated deeply with the Sringeri Sharada Peetham, which is again one of the seats of Adi Shankaracharya only. And the name, I just did a little bit of research, the person who gave him the Deeksha as a sannyasi was the 33rd Jagat Guru of the Sringeri Sharada Peetham. So for 1,000 years, this has been continuing, this tradition, and the 33rd Jagat Guru, whose complete name happens to be Sri Sachidananda Shivabhinava Narasimha Bharati Mahaswamiji. And that Jagat Guru of Sringeri Sharada Peetham is also a very accomplished person spiritually, as well as he is credited to have discovered and pointed out the precise spot where Adi Shankara was born, and he established the Kaladi Ashram. So and having established it, when that Kumbhabhishekam was happening, he has been given the Sannyasa Deeksha. So having done all this and traveled for 32 years, that's what he says, he tells Professor Kasturi, this Baba explains Advaita and Yoga more clearly than anybody else. And he says, I have run a race for 32 years, at the end of which I am receiving it so easily, so nice. It almost made me feel that we who are unable to appreciate Swami's message, we'll receive and we'll read a discourse and tell, hey, same thing in every discourse. What is the thing? I think it's because we haven't put possibly enough effort. When we try to unravel the mysteries and run, see, he's an 85-year-old. 30, 40 years of life you try not understanding, and then you are given Swami's, everything becomes so easy. The problem is, I think we have been directly given Swami's. So we just think, okay, what? This is how it is naturally. So he says another beautiful thing, Swami says, Vidya Dadati Vinayam. That is what we discussed yesterday also with regards to Mother Ishwaramma. That is, true education is that which confers humility. So though Ishwaramma was illiterate in the physical sense, she was very educated because she was an epitome of humility. The same epitome of humility that Swami Amritananda is seen in this article, because he writes that he accidentally saw a picture of Swami. We know that when it comes to Swami, there's nothing like an accident. But accidentally, he saw a picture of Swami at Bangalore when he was on his way to Sringeri Sharada Peetham. And it appears as if he and Professor Kasturi were at least acquaintances, if not friends, already. Because when he sees this picture accidentally, he inquires about it. And there's one little girl who tells Swami Amritananda that this is God. You must go and seek him. You know, and that is why he contacts Professor Kasturi and he says, oh, this is in Puttaparthi, I heard, and I know that you are also going to Puttaparthi. Let me accompany you for 2-3 days. And he happens to travel along with Professor Kasturi, comes here for 2-3 days and ends up staying for 75 days. And during those days, as you said, Swami gives him multiple interviews in which he clarifies all his doubts. And he is overwhelmed with that. In fact, he comes out to Kasturi and he tells him that, see Kasturi, even if you are promised a palace anywhere in the universe, don't go anywhere. Be here, be here, be here. And his humility is such that he also says, I don't know if this is my last birth. If this is my last birth, I am eternally grateful to that little girl. Even if this is not my last birth and if I have to come back in another birth, in my next birth also I'll be grateful to that little girl because she gave me the ultimate solution to what I had been seeking for 32 years. She directed me to Swami. This kind of humility in an 85-year-old sage towards a possibly 10 or 12-year-old girl, it's amazing. That's what makes Swami Amritananda so special. And again, yesterday we were saying the way a person has led his life, the way a person departs from the physical shows the kind of life he has led, and it was the same case with Swami Amritananda as well.
Right, and many of these things which we discussed is mentioned in the article, and there are other things that Swami reveals. I mean, you can imagine that such a great scholar, Swami calls him every day, and every other day, Professor Kasturi writes, he comes with a, you know, different kind of an awe and joy, and he would say this happened. And that's when one of those days he narrates about that Ganapati Homam that he had done. Apart from that, on many days, Swami talks about he has a problem with asthma. And Swami reveals to him that he had done one particular yoga or, some kind of a yogic practice. He had done it wrongly.
At Skanda Guha.
Right, at Skanda Guha. And Swami refers to that and Swami says, because of that, you've got this asthma. And I'm sure nobody else would have known about it. And then Swami clarifies something he says about Ramana Gita. And in fact, Professor Kasturi writes, in which incidentally Swami Amritananda's name occurs as Amritananda Yatindra.
Yatindra.
Right, and Swami clarifies about that. And in one of those conversations, Swami also refers to one of the plans that Amritananda had drawn up with the guidance of great people like Madan Mohan Malviya. And of course, this is not mentioned in the article. It comes later because that is when they had planned. What do you do to resurrect the great Indian culture? Because we know that this was all just after the Indian independence. The new government was there. The new government had its other visions of, you know, being a nation in the times, in the times of globalization and all of that. So the character of Bharat was being lost. I'm sure that must have been fond passion for all of these people, and that's when they actually start a fund by which they're collecting money. They wanted to set up this Veda Pathshala. And during that interview, Swami tells him that, you know, now you can unburden yourself of that ambition because I have decided to take up Veda Poshana. Right? This is in 1955, October. That is the time, the Navaratri that you're talking about. So Swami says, now you don't have to worry. You can give it to me. And I have decided. And that's when, you know, Professor Kasturi writes that one of the things that his search has ended of a true guru, as in his own words. And the other thing is, taking forward that mission that he had so much devoted himself was also being taken care of. And understandably, shortly thereafter, I think he ended his earthly sojourn. And Professor Kasturi writes, after the 75 days, he actually traveled back with him to Bangalore to drop him in Bangalore from where he had probably joined Professor Kasturi. And during that bus journey, Amritananda says that in one of those conversations, Swami also blesses him that you can go anywhere. I promise you, in the last moments of your life, I will come and give you darshan. So there is no way to find out whether Amritananda had, but we don't have to find out. Swami has given his word, and we can be absolutely sure that wherever it was that he breathed his last, Swami would have blessed him with that darshan.
He breathed his last in an unpronounceable place. I tried. There are some Z's and all and Z's in that letter, in that name, so I've just left the place.
I think Tirupanithura. to know about
that. From K it is. I forgot to, but it's a very, maybe in the next episode of Asana Sarthi, we'll just mention this place name. So he breathed his last in such a place, and even in such a place, unpronounceable place, Bhagwan would have been there. It was 10 months after that trip to Parthi, and I felt Swami Amritananda was a very, very smart man, because he told Professor Kasturi, even if you're given a palace, don't leave this place. And when I was reading that article where Professor Kasturi writes that he left this place, I was wondering, then why did he leave the place? And immediately the next sentence that comes is, he's saying that Swami has told me, wherever you may be, whatever, I will be there for you. Having extracted that promise only, he left. A very, very, very wise person. And so this article is so beautiful. This is one of the major articles in the first issue of Sansana Sarthi. Dear listeners, we'll take another little break, and on the other side of the break, we will try to cover a few other things in that same issue.
Yeah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. As you heard the bhajan that was sung before this, it has been sung by Raja Reddy Garu. His voice has that special quality and feel. I still remember, even to this day, my father, he says that the greatest singer ever to have sung for Swami is Raja Reddy. And keeps hearing, keeps listening. I'm sure that if we analyze this voice in terms of tonal quality, pitch adherence and such things, technically it might not be the best ever, but definitely it must have been the bhava and the feeling that was aroused when he was singing, because it's not only about what he's feeling. When my father speaks about Raja Reddy, he says, oh my God, you know, with his one song, he would take us to the lotus feet. We would feel Swami in our heart and such the like. So, not any ordinary soul. And he has written an article, and it's an amazing article in terms of language, content, everything. And it's more like a article summarizing on who Swami is and how we should approach Swami, how we should revere him, how we should not look at him, all these things. And the interesting thing is when we map this with the experiences that Raja Reddy Garu himself had with Bhagwan, as I said, which is already documented in our website as well as a series of video interviews on our YouTube channel, we will see that whatever he is stating there, whatever he is stating in the article, is not just some technical stuff for what he has read in books. These are things that he has experienced himself and contemplated a lot on it and then put it. You know, before I allow Prem to just go through some parts of that article, I just want to say that in the first article, in the first issue itself, it was made very clear that contribution of articles, especially from those who endeavor to put in, is welcome. Contribution of articles, especially from those who endeavor to put into practice what they speak and write out on spirituality, are welcome. Anything that smacks of public news or comments on public news or personal attacks, rude phraseology, or even non-devotional sentiments can find no place in here. So it was very, very strict, and it's almost like a recognition from Swami if your article gets published in Sanat Sarthi. That was how it was, and Raja Reddy Garu has written this article.
Right, and just to give a idea of, you know, what it is to have an article from none less than Raja Reddy Garu himself, when we were, you know, after we had graduated and all that, Raja Reddy would come, I think, once in a year or something and stay for a few weeks. So some of my friends had the opportunity to go and meet him. He used to be a very sweet person, very warm and welcoming. He would speak about Swami, and more importantly, he would speak about what Swami expects out of Swami's devotees, the disciplined life. And one of the things I think we have mentioned, he asked, one of the opening statements of any conversation is, he will ask, what time do you wake up? And if you say anything later than 4 o'clock, he will say that you have wasted half your day already. Right, and because that is the kind of discipline he led. And when we mentioned this to some of our senior brothers and teachers, they said, oh, you went and spoke to Raja Reddy, sir. Because they said that for him, he was even Swami was accessible, he was inaccessible. Because, you know, when Swami would come for bhajans, just after Swami would come and sit, he would come and just sit in front. He would sing, and then he would leave immediately after Swami takes aarti.
Just to add to what you're saying, Raja Reddy Garu himself describes himself as an incorrigible introvert.
Introvert, right. And that's precisely he was. I mean, and nobody would speak to him, hardly anybody had any access to him. And they all knew that he's somebody who spent maximum time with Swami. Right? Even Professor Kasturi, yeah, Swami has given him so much work that he can't be in Swami's presence all the time. So Raja Reddy was one who had the opportunity to be, you know, spend so much time with Swami. So when someone says that there is an article from Raja Reddy, you can imagine with what warmth it would have been received. And the first article that he writes is so beautiful. It is like telling that if you want to know Swami, come and see for yourself. and be open and don't compare him with anything else that you have experienced. In fact, we'll just read out that first paragraph that he writes. We can tell what he has said in the various parts, but just to give an idea of the kind of language and force with which it is written, I thought it's better to read out those few lines. He starts like this. I mean, the title of the article is The Fact About Babaji. So it starts, "Be reasonable and let not the sword of reason and discrimination rust away in the sheath of the mind. Let us not build the edifice of our faith and belief on the sandy foundation of hearsay. It is high time we wriggle and struggle out of this dull and cloudy atmosphere of vain gossip and vague ideas and behold the sun of truth, Vyavi, and the truth. And for truth, experience is the last word. One may very well get it confirmed by reliable authority, let alone the experience of that which is beyond the mind and the senses through hard sadhana and by perfect realization. But to deny the bare truth lying before the five senses of knowledge, the Jnanendriyas, amounts to nothing less than defying one's own self. In short, it is diffidence." So clearly you can understand he's talking about Swami's divinity, and it is being spoken about somebody who has been a witness to it more than anybody else. And he's saying that, "I am going to describe something which is clear, bare in front of my eyes. It is not something that is hearsay. It is not something that I've just come to hear from somebody or some great authority has told me, and on the basis of that I'm saying. It is somebody who has observed Swami from very close quarters, and whatever he is making as observations is from that standpoint."
In fact, after this, he goes on to write about the miracles of Swami. The background is that he comes from the Ramakrishna mission, and in the Ramakrishna mission, as stated by Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, miracles are something that are not sought after. Miracles are considered as distractions in the path of spirituality for any aspirant, and therefore anybody who can perform miracles, the disciples of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa tend to keep away from them. And Professor Kasturi also happens to be a follower of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, and so does Raja Reddy Garu. And it is natural that in the initial stages they feel, "What is this happening?" In fact, Raja Reddy Garu says that his first interaction with Swami was when in Bangalore he went and he saw Swami, and he saw that Swami was waving his hand and materializing vibhuti. So he went up and the first question he asked Swami is, "Why are you waving your hand like that?" And he says in reply, Swami asked him, "Why are you tucking in your shirt like that?" And he says that throughout his life, Swami has never given him a direct answer. It has always been another question or a very subtle answer which he has to think and come up with. He says that when you are asking why are you waving your palm like that, Swami is saying, "Why are you tucking in your shirt like that? Why am I tucking in? Possibly because my school wants it, my college wants it. My college wants it, or probably this is a fashion, or nothing, no reason at all. I felt like tucking, I tucked it. I don't feel like tucking in, I won't tuck in." That's the same answer. I mean, there's no particular reason, nothing. I need not do it. I'm feeling like doing it. I just felt like waving my hand. It's like that. Later on also, the second interaction that he has with Swami is in 1956 when the General Hospital is inaugurated. The Chief Minister of Andhra Pradesh State at that time, some Bizavada, some person, I forget the full name, he had come to inaugurate it, and Raja Reddy Garu had come. That time he got an interview with Swami. And again, the first question he asked Swami is, "Are you a self-realized person?" He asked him, because that is the ultimate goal you are taught. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, in Ramakrishna Mission, that is what is told, that the ultimate goal is self-realization. So he asked Swami, "Are you a self-realized person?" And he said that in reply, Swami stretched out his hand, and because the light was on, his hand was seen, and the shadow was there on the wall. Swami said, "Can you see the hand? And can you see that shadow there? What you're speaking about realization, there's nothing like realization." And when I read this, I was wondering what on earth is the answer. And Raja Reddy Garu writes that so clearly Swami gave the answer. And I was thinking, what is the answer, man? You please share. He says that Swami made it very clear to me that the hand is the hand. The shadow has to realize the hand. The hand is hand in itself. And so he said that realization is for people like me who are aspirants. He is the hand. It is his shadow that we are. So the realization is for the shadow and not for the hand. And he says, this way throughout my life Swami has guided me without answering me directly. And reading that, I just felt, namaste, pranam, you need to be at a level also to understand. And therefore, it is from that background that he writes that with his, in the next paragraph after what you read the introduction, in the next paragraph he writes that Swami's miracles are for nidarshana. I mean, they are for setting a right and setting an ideal. It's not for a show. Don't confuse his miracles with the with a kind of cheap show of yogic power.
Right, and that's the thing he says, that you know, whatever Swami does is an instantaneous fructification of his sankalpa. And this cannot be compared to what Ramakrishna says. And in fact, he says that Ramakrishna Paramahamsa speaks about sadhakas. That's a different thing. You cannot compare that with Swami. And then he goes on to take the ideas that, you know, whatever Swami materializes is actually an illusion. It's a maya. He says, how can you say? And the way, the example that he takes is when Swami materializes some sweet, like laddu. He says there is a smell to it. You eat it, there is taste, there is warmth. And, you know, probably there is even sound related to an object if that object calls for, you know, that that expression.
In fact, he says you can even get the taste of ghee in it.
Right. And we know those people who have had the opportunity to be with Swami in the sands of Chitravati. Swami would materialize some of these sweets which would be dripping with ghee. And there is no way that if you pull it out of sand, there cannot be a speck of sand sticking to it when it is covered in ghee. So he says that, you know, these are the kind of objects, and it's, as I'm saying, come from a person who has witnessed this firsthand. And he says that if you call this Maya, very beautiful statement, he says, yes, it is Maya, but only as much Maya as you and me. Right? When you agree that my existence is also Maya, then you can say that what Swami has created also is Maya, because it is as real as you and me being here.
Absolutely. So if you consider your body as Maya, in the sense you cut your leg and say, hey, no pain because it's all Maya, then what Swami is doing is Maya.
Right.
Beautiful. He goes on to say that Baba is the creator, Baba is the preserver. And you know, again, this too comes from his own experience. He shares a very interesting experience that happens in... He's also not clear whether it's...
I think before that he mentions Mr. R. Right? I think Swami is the creator. For that he gives the example of Mr. R. And I think it must be Mr. Radhakrishnan of the
Kuppam
family.
Correct.
Resurrected from the dead. Right?
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. I was actually wondering when I read, who is this R? Because I remembered Walter Cohen. I somehow forgot about, yes, we had covered that in our satsang, where I think even ants had come to the body.
Right, it was placed in the mandir. And
bang opposite to where the interview room is. And Radhamma, the wife of Kuppam Radhakrishna, comes and tells Swami, you're too late. And Swami walks in.
Sends everybody out.
And then, when he comes out, he tells, your husband is wanting some coffee, go and give it to him. And she walks in to see he's sitting and reading the paper.
Right.
Yes, he quotes that. And, you know, he also shares an experience of his own where, again, this is not in the article, but he shares, I'm just saying this to show that everything that he's writing is backed by his own experience. That was the prerequisite for writing in Sanatan Sarthi. So he says that when he was in Kodai or Uti once, Swami told him that, see, if you love Vishnu and you're a follower of Vishnu, you will see a light in my chest region. If you are a lover and follower of Shiva, you will see it in the third eye region between my eyebrows. And that night he says, Swami was seated on the bed and he saw there was a bright light from Swami's chest. And he says, this is absolutely true. He had physically never told Swami of his love for Vishnu, but he says that I am a great lover of Lord Krishna. And therefore, I saw it that way. So the next morning, Swami wakes up and leaves, and he goes and searches on Swami's bed and finds one torch. and he tries to shine the torch through some bedsheet to see if he can create the same kind of effect. And Swami walks into the room and catches him red-handed. And he is also feeling very ashamed. He, in fact, again, all great people have humility as their trademark. He, in the interview as late as 2007, you know, we all have read stories and heard about how spiritually accomplished he is. He says, you know, how weak I am, Maya I fell into Maya, doubting my ego. He speaks like this with utter humility in the interview, and he says that it was again Maya and my ego. And he says, Swami also got, flustered with me. Swami said, what do you want me to do to make you believe? You tell me. He said, Swami said that and walked out. He says, like this, Swami has been extremely patient and has done so many such miracles. You know, having had darshan of Swami as Vishnu, you know, as, no wonder he writes that Baba is the creator and preserver. Dear listeners, the article actually goes on and there are some more beautiful things. The time in our studio shows it's nearly 2 o'clock, so we'll conclude with this. The next week we will be going back to our conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, another devotee Hislop there. And when we return to Sanatana Sarathi, we will try to quickly cover this few more points possibly in Raja Reddy Sir's article before going to the next issue of the Sanatana Sarathi. Hope you are enjoying this new endeavor. We are enjoying it a lot, and we are very happy to go through these gems and treasures. We are grateful to Swami for the same. On that note, dear listeners, we will conclude with a bhajan. And on the other side of the bhajan, as always, you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love. Keep listening. Let us keep thinking of Swami more and more. May our love for Bhagwan keep growing every passing moment. Thank you. Jai Sairam.